For this and all Clinical Updates podcasts, a 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit will be available for a limited time. To claim credit, view the slide deck associated with this podcast and complete the evaluation found in the slides. Speakers, planners, and CME staff do not have any relevant financial relationships with ineligible companies to disclose.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us in our Clinical Updates podcast. The goal of this series is to provide concise, on-the-go clinical updates on practice-relevant topics. Today, we have Dr. Devine, with whom we will discuss compassion fatigue. Hello, Dr. Devine, and thank you for joining me.
Good morning. Happy to be here. It's always fun to do something like this, so excited to do this for you.
And it's always fun and educational talking to you, of course. So let's get right into it. What is compassion fatigue?
You know, I think that when we consider compassion fatigue, it's important that we also understand kind of what's into it. And so, you know, the longer talk that I give, I actually spend quite a bit of time talking about empathy, because empathy and compassion, you kind of got to know what those are before you kind of move into compassion fatigue. Empathy is that kind of that process in which you kind of take the perspective of another person. And then, of course, in our job, as it's patients, right? And when we look at, if we contrast that with compassion is actually, you need to have empathy, but also compassion is kind of that extra step where you want to kind of actually relieve the suffering of someone else. And so there's a big difference between empathy and compassion. If you look at compassion fatigue, it's a little bit different in that, you know, when they first described this back in 1992, it's not something that people have talked about for a long, long time, but it was felt that it was kind of this physical, kind of mental exhaustion that was caused by basically overstimulation, this depleted ability to cope with your environment, right? So, for instance, in an emergency room physician, constantly being exposed to the stress and the anxiety and the trauma. So it's that work-related kind of loss of ability to nurture people, and mostly because it just is a constant for you.
It is interesting that you mentioned this, because it's like an appendix to a topic we are discussing in the series of medicine, which is Dr. Hand and Jesse Roski are talking about how empathy makes a difference that is measurable in patient outcome through engagement in their own care. Now, in your take on it, you are talking about more how we feel and how we get better at it so we can keep at it, so to speak. So how is compassion fatigue manifested, and how does it affect us as providers?
Yeah, it's interesting, because if you take a group and they are kind of repetitively exposed to the trauma, you know, there's more to it than just the trauma, right? It can be that there's no teamwork where you work, or their job is really repetitive. And so what'll happen is people will start to develop kind of this inability to show that compassion. They'll feel like they maybe have less purpose. They'll question kind of their beliefs. Often people will not feel satisfaction at work, which is a big thing for a big system like ours. If people suddenly don't have, you know, that self-satisfaction in their job, often they're looking for other jobs. But they can almost have kind of an anxiety type attacks where they're sweating, they might have high heart rates, they may feel exhausted all the time. And it bleeds into your home as well, right? Mm-hmm. So you go home, you're, you know, less interested in intimacy, or you tend to isolate. And it's really interesting how, as people slowly move into this, often it's recognizing it that's so important. So, for instance, if you're the manager of the ER and you're noticing that somebody is, in the old days we'd say burned out, right? Mm-hmm. They were burned out. But a lot of those people, it's just that the overstimulation, the trying to act compassionate but having difficulty continuing it because of that, you know, that just that overload, basically.
So, of course, burned out is the end of the spectrum when you just go through the motions. Now,
correct.
I don't think we could summarize it only in the sense of it goes to patient care. There's a lot of bureaucracy, so to speak, that happens in the world of medicine these days that is not getting any better. It's just getting worse. So how is this different to one of those things? I'll give you an example, right? The medical, I know the word is debatable these days, but the medical establishment says you have to control your patient's pain, but you have to use less opioids. Is this one of those things that the establishment is saying, oh, you are fatigued, so now we'll give you more things to do that have nothing to do with your love for medicine, so you are less fatigued? Is this something, so at the end of the day, is one of those things, and are you like fighting against the windmills yourself, or there's a whole movement and there's a backing that will help you fight this off?
Yeah, and it's interesting because you bring up one of the big points of compassion fatigue is it's just not your interactions with your actual patient, right? It can be your work environment where you're overwhelmed by dictations and paperwork, and honestly, in patient and physicians or providers in my age bracket, it's the computers, right? You've got so much mm-hmm. computer work to do that you don't know how to do it, and often if you look. Providers typically have very high expectations of themselves, and they want to give quality care. And if you are working that hard and you're trying to do those things but don't have time, right? You're not only overwhelmed with work, but you don't have the time to really put towards the things that you don't understand. And a lot of times that builds resentment. So mm-hmm. so resentment often can be a part of it. And it's interesting, too, because I think that a lot of times people who end up going down the path of compassion fatigue, they're often people as well that may not have great social supports at home. They may have already had difficulties coping, and they may have their own traumatic experiences or things that put them at risk. But I think you're really correct. It's so much of all of the things we're expected to do on a daily basis combined with the exposures to people that need our compassion, and often we're unable to continue to give that.
Yeah, and I would say, number one, the fun of medicine, and number two, the true goal of medicine is you sit with the patient, you figure out the problem, you use your knowledge, use tools as needed, and you come up with an answer that makes the patient better. That is now single-digit percentage of what we do. It's all this... Mm-hmm. I speak a little bit of French, so I say all this bullshit around that has nothing to do with that. So it's a huge deal, and is the root of so many issues that are bureaucratic and difficult to fight these days. So within you, your group, and CentraCare, at any of those three levels, what can you offer us?
You know, I think that from a kind of an organizational standpoint, the biggest part of understanding compassion fatigue is being able to recognize it, right? Mm-hmm. So from a system level, it's really, can the leadership recognize when somebody is having difficulties, you know, their job performance is declining, which is unusual for them, they're making mistakes potentially, they're not at work, they're looking for other jobs, and people are aware of that. And so I think from a system level, it's really recognizing, hey, this is somebody, you know, who's really having problems. I think, you know, it's really interesting because if you look at some of the data, the older physicians actually have less trouble with compassion fatigue, and because they've learned how to cope with these different issues and have kind of built in their own kind of way of working things out and understanding. Often these are people who have the ability to ask for help, right? Mm-hmm. And so really from a personal standpoint, it's really when you feel this, you know, you ask for help. You work on those things from a standpoint of, you know, that work-home balance, and really looking at your, you know, what's your personal strategy for self-care? And I think our system talks about these things all the time, different meetings that we have, you know, really how we look at things and our ability to take care of ourselves so that we can take care of our patients. So, I mean, it is at all those different levels, it's important that everybody does their job. And I think for the system, it's really recognition, because that helps us keep employees, that helps us keep physicians, and offer them the help that they might need.
I'm more interested in By the time somebody makes a mistake or clearly, you know, skips at work, they are long gone.
Yes.
Now, the thing is, somebody might look fine, but they are paying a high price outside of work, unknowingly so. And that's unfair. So you quote old style physicians or old ages, etc., you know, which many of them are retired now. But before, if you wanted to work 18 hours a day, most of it because you were working doing the fun part that I told you. Now, yeah. If you work 18 hours a day, it's because you want to keep on doing that, but a big chunk is taken over by these things that have nothing to do with the fun of medicine. And more that's becoming intrusive. So I think it's almost unrealistic for the system to be so sensitive to detect what's going on with people at home. Yeah. So how would you tell people to say, look, it's unfair that you should be doing this, that you get home and you're moody, you're tired, you're not doing hobbies, you're doing paperwork. How do we say no? How do we recognize when that's happening?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, there's actually studies on a couple of these different things. On, for instance, is there a way to help people be more compassionate? And it's almost, there's been some different programs where they're almost kind of a Buddhist teaching where and meditation where people learn to stay calm during particular situations and not to suck in all of that that anxiety and stress that sometimes comes with working with difficult patients or traumatic different things. And it's really about, you know, when you're going home, do you have that support at home? Are you able to talk to people at home about how you felt during your day? And there's actually different programs now that are set up to help people be educated on the warning signs that they might recognize in themselves. You know, for instance, being much more irritable or difficult to work with, or again, the mistakes and different things like that. But so much of the training around avoiding or improving this compassion fatigue is really about resilience training, self-care, and meditation has probably been the direction that people have been going for quite some time.
And that's in the slides. Some, I would say, resources are in the slides, right?
Correct. And for instance, one of the big things that they found is that, and I, in my career, there was no such thing as debriefing when bad things happen in our emergency room, right? Mm-hmm. And in the days where I was working in a small community, I covered the ER, you know, once a week, and a lot of really bad things happened. Now, one of the ways, for instance, that systems help people deal with these things that can be very traumatizing is having a debriefing so people can talk about how it made them feel and what went right, what went wrong. And it's a way for people to kind of basically unload that stuff so they don't keep carrying it.
And it's mind-blowing. You were talking about meditation, and we can go all we want around it, but at the end of the day, that guy that said sit under a tree and look at the squirrels chase each other and be in the moment, that's all you need to do. I think beyond trying to learn that, the problem is how do we, I think there's the emphasis in recognizing at the individual level, nobody can recognize it for you, and you saying, no, this is too much, etc., and asking for help. I know CentraCare has a system, but providers, especially doctors, like to talk to other doctors quite often. You know, we have this Greek mythology, demigod kind of thing, to each other. But do you have a resource yourself, or you have a group you work with for that, or not? You don't do anything in particular, if that makes sense. I hope I'm framing the question right.
Yeah, do you mean as far as like what do we do personally to kind of to maintain, you know, our own?
No. Do you yourself, and I don't know if you have a group of people that you work with, offer a resource for providers within CentraCare?
You know, I don't think I really do. I think that, you know, again, so much of this work and so much of this recognition. I mean, think about, you know, in your career when you recognize that a physician is really struggling. I think in general, colleagues do a pretty good job of recognizing a colleague who's, you know, struggling.
Okay.
And the question is, you know, how well do we all take that that recognition? And I think for us all, if somebody comes to us and says, you know, I can just tell you're really struggling and you're having a bad time, you know, is there anything we could do to kind of help you? And within CentraCare, I do believe there are people that we can reach out to. Of course, I work in behavioral health, so I'm, you know, I have a psychotherapist right next door. But I think that we really owe it to each other, that when we recognize that in each other, to say, hey, is there anything I can do to help? You know, would it be good if you could find somebody to talk to? You know, what are the things that are really upsetting to you or seem to be overburdening you? Because I think often providers may not recognize that in themselves, but somebody working in the next office may.
I really like that point, because we all know what our work is about, so we could say, you know, that I really like that point, helping each other.
And it's hard. I think that, and often it can be things that are both at work and at home. I mean, too many of us bring our work home, right? And I believe that truly we all owe it to each other to kind of lend that hand. And but the hard part is, if you're that person that's struggling, being able to ask for that help. And because I do think that in the end, you know, your work is going to be better. You're going to be a better parent at home. You're going to be a better physician. You're going to listen better to the patients that we serve. So there is. Self-care is a huge thing. And I think for me, it's running, right? I get up in the morning. I have a running partner that I've ran with for 20 years. That's where I unload, right? I have some place to, you know, chat.
You are in the moment. At that time, there's no badge, phone, nothing.
And I mean, and for some it's yoga, for some it's meditation, for some it's, you know, but I think everybody, you have to find that place so that you can bring to work your best. And I think that's probably the most important, is being honest with yourself.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Or be good to yourself, like the Journey song.
Yeah.
So
I was a Journey fan.
You were? Oh, I had to send you. We play Journey songs with my family band, so I'll send you some. So I know we have some slides with some data about this, some resources. Anything else you would like to add before we bring it to an end?
I don't think so. I just think that, I just would encourage people that to really do that self-assessment sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if somebody does come to you and they feel like you're struggling, you know, be honest. And I think as providers and physicians, often we're the worst at asking for help. And we're in a job that can tend to be very difficult, at times quite stressful. And we hear a lot of sad stories. And
I know.
Sometimes we internalize those a little more. And you need a way to learn how to unload those and be able to be your best at work. So that would be my summary.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time and expertise. And again, we have a slide deck attached to this podcast. And of course, you have plenty more data to talk about and slides. If somebody wants to reach out, I'm sure you will be fine with that.
I would like to just mention, too, if people are interested in addiction topics.
Yes.
Every week on Wednesdays at 12:15, we do a one-hour talk. Actually, today it's about hepatitis C in small communities. So something really interesting. But we have different talks every week. Please feel free to email me if anybody has an interest in getting connected.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again. And thanks, everybody, for connecting to the podcast.
All right. Thank you.